Good morning, everybody. We can finally see what we're doing here in the area. 918, welcome into the Mary Griffith Show. Scott Hardy in for Mary. And, of course, the Mary Griffith Show is sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee, provided by Refreshment Services Pepsi of Quincy. Hand-roasted beans, premier coffees roasted and delivered in small batches and delivered fresh to your door or at the convenience store near you to assure you a rich, sophisticated, delicious coffee experience. And, of course, it is always a pleasure, and I feel lucky to be here because it's kind of like being in the playpen with some friends here. I'm talking about Chuck Scholes and Jack Freiberg. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Scott.
Oh, man, there's so much that you guys wanted to talk about. Where do you want to begin?
Well, we lost a couple of great men from our area that had a lot of influence in two different ways. And I'm going to let Jack talk about Tom Marks. But Father John Ostick, age 102, wow. Visitations at QU Chapel on Sunday and then Mass at noon. It was an incredible person who was a philosopher, was a theologian, but also had a PhD in biology. And Father John and Father Eugene Middendorf and the QU biology department, Al Pogge, back in the day, 50, 60 years ago, they had a boat. They would go out on the river, they would measure everything, and they sent all that to the Corps of Engineers. So fast forward 50 years, and we have this local group that's trying to save Quincy Bay, which is turned into a mud flat.
Right.
It'd be a cornfield in 20 years if we don't do something. And there's already an island out there. So we worked, and we got a good local group, folks like Glenn Sanders, Rome Frericks, they've all been great on this, and Senator Durbin took up our cause. And eventually, we got this $33 million to restore Quincy Bay. So when these young biologists hit town, young people that are fish and wildlife experts and so forth, they discovered this treasure trove of information from 50 years. This is what they would like to get the bay back when it was a hunter and fisher's paradise and just, you know, a beautiful wetland. So when they were telling me that, oh, this was so valuable to them, I tried to track down Father John so he would know that. And he has participated. He was on the Public Works Board in Springfield, Quincy, other places. He was a kind of an expert on water issues. And anyway, I found him down in Alton. This was about 3 years ago, so he was only 99. Sharp as a tack, and was able to tell him that. And Al Pogge, who's still around town. And Al helped us set up the STEM lab at St. Peter's. So what they did all those decades ago is going to help get us back Quincy Bay, which is the largest inland harbor on the upper Mississippi, and it's a treasure.
Right. It really is, and it's a good thing that the federal funding has come through and they can make it the wetland. I know people were maybe surprised a bit about that, but, get the cut through back up and going and just make it a wetland and get as many species in there as possible. So.
Yeah, well, the Franciscans have had great influence on Quincy, obviously educationally, but also, you know, spiritually and environmentally, and that's a big part of the Franciscan
right.
Ethic, of course, is ecology.
Exactly.
But Jack, why don't you talk about Tom Marks' influence? Really reading about it, I knew about it in Quincy, but stretches like west to Kirksville, east over to Jacksonville.
I've known Tom and Kathy for many years, and Tom is one of those exemplary developers that had a huge influence on this area. I mean, probably no one anymore as far as it, than him in the field of real estate development, because he not only worked here, but also worked in Hannibal and Jacksonville and some in Kirksville. I mean, his influence in this region ran far and wide. And you know, Tom, many people remember when Tom had his produce store on North 12th Street that was around for many years, and also the fireworks store that he had down in Hannibal that he parlayed throughout the years into the nation's largest fireworks superstore that's there south of Hannibal that we're all familiar with. But his loss is a great loss for not only this community, but for the entire region. His visitation is this afternoon. I mean, Kathy and my ex-wife worked together for a number of years, and we used to party together back in the day. And he was just a terrific guy. What a concert goer. Oh, my gosh. No matter no matter what concert I went to, if he was there, he always had better seats than I did. It would be a wave across the room, you know, when I saw them. So, yeah. I mean, just a terrific guy.
Yeah. Everybody speaks highly of him. And my memories of Tom, I didn't really know him too well, but when we were doing planning, like when we first started with Chuck Bevel, we created the planning department, mm-hmm. we started having these hearings. I'd see him in the back of the room, usually the last row, never said a word, all the way through Tesca, downtown Rita, even more recently when Dave Nissen and I chaired the strategic plan for the city. He went to all the hearings, or even on the Highway 57 upgrade. You'd see him, but he never said anything, but he was in the back of the room, he was listening intently, and he knew where south, north, east, wherever the development was going to be, and he was pretty much everywhere.
He was on the ball when it came to that.
You drive down Broadway now, and it's just a you know, you can just sit there, that's Tom.
He understands the retail market, and that it's driven by car count, which Broadway is somewhere around 28,000, 30,000 cars
right.
a day. And
right.
I, you know, Bob Johnson owns 36th and Broadway on the east corner there. Mm-hmm. He'll tell you the whole story. He used to sit in the living room of the folks that had the sale barn there and tell them, hey, I'll get Walmart for you. And they'd say, how could you guarantee? They said, well, there's a Kmart across the street. Sam Walton doesn't hire site development people. He just sees where Kmart went. They already did that, so he'll go across the street. So sure enough, that was the original Walmart was there.
Right.
But Bob grew up in Palmyra. He's from Kansas City now. But he told me, you know, we're thinking Broadway just keeps getting longer and longer, elongated. So like you couldn't do much, you know, in the middle of town, but out there we cut Main Street through to 48th, Oak Street through. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's great for a dentist office or investment guy, light medical, whatever. But retail needs to have the cars.
Light medical.
Yeah, you know, a little outpatient. But he was right. He said, no, they'll just keep going. You'll go across the interstate, which, of course, we eventually did with Prairie Crossings, because it's all about traffic count.
Right.
And, yeah, you can get it widened out with some of the lighter stuff, but need those cars.
Tom was at the cornerstone of that with the Staples development.
Sure.
It started,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the arguments in the early 90s from your predecessor in office saying, oh, no, we need hotels, you know, right by the Civic Center, and the hotels were like saying...
Which is true.
Well, it is true, but they were saying... Well, we need to go out Broadway because of the traffic count, and everybody was kind of like, well, just let them, you know, they want to come here. That's the thing.
Well, Tom Marks understood. Jim Mantesti was a great disciple in this regard of, you know, it's not a town of 40,000 people. It's a retail market of 240,000 based on, you know, they do license plate surveys, they do credit cards and zip codes and whatever, and they can tell you that. You know, when we first went to see Joseph Bank, they said, we don't come into any town less than 100,000.
I remember that. 95.
Smallest town was Springfield, Illinois, where they
that.
Were.
It was 1995. Yeah.
And we laid it all out. If you're a doctor in Hannibal or a lawyer in Keokuk or Pittsfield, you're going to come to Quincy to buy your suit. And that store never lost money. We lost the store when they merged with Men's Warehouse, unfortunately.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, you got to convince them. You got to go begin to start a... Kind of, there's a whole story to tell about how folks come into Quincy every day. I tried to convince Ida, you got to give us money. You're not a 50,000, but right now there's 100,000 people in Quincy.
Mm-hmm.
They came in here to work, to go to the hospital, to do their banking, to eat at a restaurant, whatever. So we need to be treated that way. We have a little micro urban
sure.
area here that's unusual because of our isolation. We have our own everything.
And knock on wood that they've listened to, you know, the current plans for the bridge to have 3rd Street be two-way to...
4th Street out in front here, too,
yeah,
also two-way.
Yeah, but I think the plan is to kind of limit that to traffic a little bit, but make 3rd Street two-way and connect it, because it's a brilliantly simple idea to connect it from all the way past Marblehead to the interstate up to 24 and just have a two-way. You get off there.
And also
trucks
they
get
can get on Broadway and go 104.
Exactly.
But that way, around our square, we don't have a highway going down 4th Street with semis.
Right.
That's going to go back to a two-way street, which everybody tells you, you got to have that around your square. And then it's easy to walk back and forth to tiramisu from the park or whatever.
Right.
That pedestrian-friendly.
Right, exactly. We're at 928. When we come back, we're going to take a break. We're going to find out what the commodity markets are doing. Then we're going to talk about a couple of books that you guys have brought in.
That's
so
great.
We will do that and a lot more, and an eight-year anniversary as well before we wrap things up here on the Mary Griffith Show on WTAD. Thank you very much, Lisa, and we'll get another update from you next hour at 9:32 here on the Mary Griffith Show. I am not Mary Griffith. I am Scott Hardy, in for Mary here today. Mary, of course, will be back with the show on Monday, but my pleasure to be talking history and a bunch more. A couple of guys who know it and who are living it at the moment, talking about Chuck Scholes and Jack Freiberg. And real quick, you guys put out a press release here recently saying that you collected photos for several times, but you need more.
We're not going to take your photos. Bring them to the Quincy Public Library. They'll be scanned. So you can take your precious photos back home, but we need those for our Adams County history book. You can go ahead and pre-order that now, too. I believe at this early price, which is $49.95. Originally, they had a November 15th deadline on that, Scott, and that's been extended. We're gonna keep that price into February. But we need to hear the family stories, have the family photographs, and so forth. I've seen some great ones. I was looking at one taken from the top of St. Francis Church steeple,
wow,
looking west.
Wow.
So that would have been Vine Street in those days before it was college, right? And looking down the street, I think all the same buildings are there, like where Underbrinks is. Of course, we had the convent there for St. Francis, but Underbrinks all the way down to what was Simon's Tavern, Jack. Remember Simon's Tavern?
Yes.
Was famous for their tamales.
Yes.
So anyway, the buildings are there, but you look closely, you'll see there's another row of buildings behind those buildings because each of those buildings had an outhouse. When that picture was taken, we did not have plumbing in the second ward of Quincy at that point, apparently. But yeah, we need the pictures, we need the stories, and I think you can just go to our website, Jack, AdamsCounty200.org or whatever that is.
I think it's Adams County CO.
That's it.
Yes, Adams County CO200 book. Well, that's the email address. I'm sorry, I'm looking at that, but yeah.
It's Adams County.
Yeah, that'll be all you need, I think.
Okay.
So we also have, now that book, we're going to hopefully have it ready for sale this time next year in our bicentennial year of 2025 so we can get to Christmas of 2025. But this Christmas, available right across the street here at the History Museum gift shop, Tales of John Wood and His Adams County. And this is, if you enjoy those Sunday history columns in the Herald Whig, which I call them Sunday histories. Now the Whig only comes on Saturday, but
right,
they still
right.
include those. And these, Jack's got a couple in there. They're fascinating. They're the best of the best. And really tremendous Christmas gift, especially maybe somebody doesn't live in Quincy anymore.
Yeah, well, I, for instance, I'm buying three for my children, you know, because I've got a couple pieces in there. But a lot of there's varied authors. A lot of them are Reg Ankrums, and Reg is the one who needs the accolades for this, putting this whole thing together.
Well, and I'm just reading here, Jack, also Joy Austin, Heather Bangert, Arliss Dittmer, they joined with Reg as editors. But you're right, Phil Rayburn's in there. Iris Nelson has, it's one of the first ones I went to because she wrote about the Red Light District back when we actually had a legal Tenderloin District in Quincy where prostitution and gambling were legal and regulated. And just incredible stuff. But Iris has done amazing. She's the one that uncovered Lincoln having the rum sweat after the debate. So.
And see, all of these pieces are pretty much 19th century pieces that are in here. You know, this is the early Quincy stuff. That's why it's named Tales of John Wood and His Adams County. But there's a lot in there about Adams County's founding. My pieces are basically about the German migration to Quincy and how much hazard it was, because everybody that came here, and this is the lion's share of the Germans, all came through New Orleans. And there's a letter in there that's written. Michael Mast was actually the first German, single German. He was a single man and was a tailor here in town. He was the first German to come here, but my great-great-great-grandfather, Anton Delabar, was the first German family to come here in 1833.
Wow.
And that story tells about his coming here with his family and the hazards that they had. Because, you know, when you're coming here in the 1830s, I mean, cholera was rampant. Mm-hmm. When you were in New Orleans, you tried to get there in the winter because there was less chance of all the tropical diseases that were there at that time of year. And then you'd get out of there in the spring. But I'm telling you, that was an arduous and risky trip here.
Yeah.
I mean, Anton Delabar's brother went on a ship that was coming from New Orleans up to Quincy. There were 32 Germans from that area of Germany they were from, which is the southeastern part of Germany. Of the 32, 18 died of cholera on the ship. So Delabar's brother was buried in the Mississippi River. He never got here. But Delabar was quite a promoter for this area. But needless to say, he didn't talk about the hazards that happened on the way here.
And the book, again, is Tales of John Wood and His Adams County. So John Wood welcomed the Germans and solicited German immigrants. Would go down to St. Louis and look, especially for the craftsmen. And he spoke German. And I was reading another one of these that I couldn't recall ever seeing this before, but when John Wood ran for lieutenant governor with Bissell in 1858, he was nominated for lieutenant governor by Abraham Lincoln. Wow. And Abraham Lincoln, crafty politician that he was, picked Wood because of the German vote, what they called the Dutch vote. And it was said that John Wood, if he left Quincy, he'd take the Dutch vote with him. But the Germans were very loyal to John Wood, and everybody coveted that Dutch vote.
Sure.
So of course, all roads lead back to Quincy. But I thought it was interesting that shrewd Abraham Lincoln said, yeah, let's use Wood, who was a close friend.
Isn't it funny, though? It's nearly 200 years, and, you know, John Wood was looking for skilled workers. Today, 2024,
we have 700 jobs available in Quincy right now.
We're looking for skilled workers. So,
we need immigrants.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the need continues to be there.
And the immigrants that came with it, you know, they experienced prejudice. Not so much in Quincy because we've had so many Germans. Yeah,
the number that I've always heard is that Quincy at that point in time was 40% German.
Yeah. And if by German ancestry, the census has had it over 50 a couple different times. And from various parts, like you were mentioning, was that Baden where they were from,
yes,
Jack?
Yes.
And, you know, and up at Golden, they were the Ostfriesers, East. They were just right next to the Netherlands there.
Okay.
And often, you know, they...
And a lot of them were Lutherans.
Very much. And, there's three Lutheran churches in Golden.
But see, my family were all members of St. Boniface.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, my German ancestors were Lutheran. But Grandpa Schrader's granddaughter married Jacob Schultz, who was Catholic from Austria. And that was a big deal back then.
Oh, that was a huge...
He went back to Austria to have his father approve it.
That was a huge deal because the Lutherans and the Germans never met. And if they did, it wasn't friendly.
Yeah, and even though there's not much difference.
No.
And the best German records we have here are at St. James Church. A lot of them, you know, originated with Salem and whatever, but they have great records there. And, you know, we've done a lot of research, and so have the Germans. And, you know, we have pretty good connection there as to if you go especially to the Hereford area where thousands can trace their heritage.
Yeah, well, 11 years ago, I went back to Germany with my sister.
Well, you see some Freiburgs over there, right?
No, we didn't go up to Allendorf where the Freiburg. We went to the Baden area and met the Delabars that were there. So we met
still there.
The Delabars are still there, and we met them there, as had John Stegeman before me. So, wow. Yes, I mean, because John and Jim, you know, are my second cousins. We have common great-grandfathers.
Right, and we have that heritage still today with Calf Town and all everything and the stories from then as well.
Well, we still do the educational exchange with a little town outside of Hereford and Enger at Whittaken Chapel. Or what, it's wonderful for us to, you know, we've learned a lot from that, and I'll never forget after 9/11, we went ahead and it was our year to visit, and as we came in on the bus, they were all waving American flags, and I get teary-eyed just thinking of that, but they, we have great international friendship there, and you know, you just look in the phone book or on the signage around Hereford, you see all these Quincy names. My son was with me on one of those trips, and we're walking out, and we're out in the countryside, where my ancestors were from, and we see this guy working with a hoe out in his field, a little stocky guy with this really tow-headed blonde hair, and I said, Jake, who's that look like to you? And he said, it looks like a Hoschlag, because he was friends with Pete Hoschlag's son, Tony, who we often call Repeat, because he looked just like Pete. And anyway, I swear we got up to the farmstead, and the sign was Hoschlag.
Oh, wow.
So there you go. I also had a ride to the airport one time, a nice Mercedes, and I'm asking this guy, he's, oh, yeah, I fix cars for a living, and then I'll drive sometimes. I'm a mechanic. What's your name? Niehaus. That's my mechanic at Quincy.
Right, yeah. The name of the book is Tales of John Wood and His Adams County, and it's available across the street in the gift shop at the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. We're at 942. Need to take a quick break. We'll do that and be back with more of Finding Germany or Finding Quincy in Germany here on the Mary Griffith Show on WTAD. All righty, welcome back to the Mary Griffith Show at 9:45 here. Fascinating discussion, as always, with Chuck Scholes, Jack Freiberg with the Adams County Bicentennial, who are seeking additional historical photos. You can just go to the Quincy Public Library and have them scan that for you, so that way you can keep a hold of that precious family keepsake and just have it exposed that one little time, and that's it. And it'll go into the book, which will be out this time in 2025 is what we're looking at, just before
October.
Okay.
But you can do the pre-order and get the special price. This is a really nice, very nicely bound, like a coffee table type book.
That's what I was going to say. It was a coffee table type book. And we encourage organizations, in other words, these small country churches, for instance, that have go back into the 1830s and the 1840s, write up some history of that church and submit it to us, because those are the things that strike people's hearts, where they say, yeah, my great-grandmother was a founding member of that church. And those things, those are the kind of things that need to be in this book.
And we have history with our churches. Mendon was a big part of the Underground Railroad, and that was done mainly through the Congregationalists and the Presbyterians. Same way with Payson, stop on the Underground Railroad. So it's those church histories. I think the church in Urstead, Disciples of Christ, that's maybe the oldest. But, you know, we've got some old churches here in Quincy, too. Our congregational church started as the Lord's Barn there on North 4th Street.
It was the first church in Quincy.
Before I forget, though.
Okay.
January 18th of 2025, so we're now only 2 months out, that's our 200th birthday. So on that date, we are going to have a birthday bash. The Armory over here on Jersey Street, Historic Armory, if you haven't been in there, I had not been in there since I saw the Heinz All-Stars play the Harlem Globetrotters there in about 1963 or something. But it's a wonderful space. It's I didn't know they had apartments in there. The Colonel had a real nice apartment in there. Anyway, January 18th at the Armory on Jersey, it's from 5 to 11, so it's a dinner and a dance. And the NAPODs, who have been so supportive of our community in general and the Bicentennial in specifically, are bringing in this band that, from Nashville, that apparently is just tremendous. So it's cocktails, dinner. We're going to recognize all the villages in Adams County. Lots of dancing and fun. And it's $125 a person. And I think you could go to that same website.
When are tickets going to be available?
I would say go to the website to find out, but I'm sure they'll have a big press conference or something to kick it off. Our impresario's on this, so you know you're going to have a good time. It's being sort of co-chaired by Kathy Dooley, who we all know knows how to put on a show, and Ryan Tanner, who has won Tonys for what they do on Broadway. So I think we're in pretty good hands as far as putting on a good show on January 18th. And our sponsors that have been so generous in helping us raise the money to put on the Bicentennial, they all, as part of their sponsorships, receive tickets. But there's tickets for the general public, and everybody that's anybody's going to want to be there, right, Jack? Once every 200 years.
If you and I are going to be there, you know it's going to be a happening event.
Oh, sure. Hide the punch, but yeah.
Yeah, really. Get the defibrillators activated.
But no,
contact the fire department.
That place has really had, it's really been done up right. I've been there for one event. I've been there for the Ducks Unlimited.
The Fishers and Ryan and Jay have redone it.
And Ryan and Megan Fisher have done a tremendous job along with Ryan Tanner on that place.
It's a great building right there in the heart of Quincy. It's just been sitting there for decades.
And you talk about making it into the highest and best use. They've done it.
Yeah, it is. I go by there all the time, and yeah, there's always been somebody working on something. And then it was so funny. It was a Saturday morning. I had to work here, and it was back in October, so the guy could do this. Apparently, a private group had rented it out, and it was a Saturday. So I had to get here by about 4:30 in the morning. There was a gentleman out in the back near the back corner. He had his handmade propane tank smoker. And he was cooking up barbecue for this event, and he was there at 4:30 with the fire. I got out of here at 10, and I was heading back that way, and he was still there, and it was like,
Did you get a taste, or
unfortunately,
still wasn't
no?
Ready?
Unfortunately, no, I didn't. But still,
I mean, you need to sell yourself. Say, I've been admiring your work all day. Why don't you go ahead and let me have a sample and sell it a little bit?
Well, I'm sure the food will be special that night because it's going to be catered by the patio.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. It definitely will be then. That's for sure. So that's January the 18th.
Coming up on us.
Dinner and a dance at the Armory right over on Jersey Street. $125 per person. It's a kickoff to the Adams County Bicentennial.
So January 17th.
17th.
18th is the birthday. But what I was going to say is that on January 17th of 1825, we were part of Pike County. We were the Village of Bluffs. The next day, by act of the Illinois General Assembly, we became Adams County and Quincy, and then the park across the street, of course, was called John Square because we were named for John Quincy Adams.
Now, you've got to understand that Pike County at that time ran at the south end about where Calhoun County is all the way up to the Wisconsin border. It was about entire western third of the state.
The military tract. So everybody that served in the War of 1812, they got these tracts, many of which never intended to come west, and they sold it, and that's how people like Willard Keyes and John Wood and others, it was a big business. Yeah. But they were just starting to form counties. Your listeners in Hancock County, also their bicentennial in 2025. In January was their birth date as well. I think they might be 3 days older than we are, perhaps. But, it's very interesting to see how that all developed. And I think, as we've told them before, Columbus, Illinois, for your listeners out there in Columbus, population 74 or whatever, they're supposed to be the county seat because that's the geographic center of Adams County. And that's why Carthage is where it is, and that's why Pittsfield is where it is. But in Quincy, Willard Keyes and John Wood, they were not going to let that county seat be anywhere other than Quincy. So it was a lawsuit. There was an election over it. But the courthouse is still here in Quincy and not much in Columbus. At one time, it was a little bit more bustling than it is now.
Well, but the whole point being is most of the United States is developed along rivers. If they have the capability of doing that, because that, in the 19th century, that was your major form of transportation.
Right. Yeah, I've always wondered though. Here, Washington Park. If you go to most every other county around here, they've got a square, and in the middle of that square is where the courthouse is. Right. But here in Quincy, we don't have that.
Well, the courthourase was across from the Lincoln Douglas
Debate
Monument
Sixth Street.
On Fifth.
On Fifth, I mean.
Between the middle of the block on Fifth. And it was a big pillars, and that would have been the courthouse for Lincoln practice and where
Judge
Douglas presided.
Because if you go back
presided.
To the early days of Washington Park when it was John Square, one of the things that happened is people would bring in their cattle and their livestock, and they would hold them for a couple days, and they were allowed to graze on John Square before they ended up going to the slaughterhouse. So it had a practical use when it was originally started.
But I know what you mean. Most of them have the courthouse in the square.
Right,
they
right.
used to have the public restrooms accessible from the outside without going into the courthouse and going downstairs. Still like that in Macomb. It's like that in Pittsfield. It has mm-hmm. a great old courthouse. Carthage. Carthage, I maintain, and I used to work for Paul Simon. And Senator Simon literally has been to every courthouse in Illinois.
Sure.
And he maintained Carthage has the most beautiful courthouse in Illinois, and it'd be hard to argue against it. And,
yeah.
and you know, I was up there one time as a young lawyer, and I'm up against this guy from Chicago, and it was Judge Stewart, Max Stewart, tough guy. And this Chicago lawyer's trying to butter him up, and he says, Judge, you've done a wonderful job with the restoration of this courthouse. And Judge Stewart looked down at him and said, young man, we didn't restore our courthouse around here. We keep things up. That was good for me.
Yeah.
I thought, okay.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding.
That's
yeah.
a good start.
Yeah, it's like the Pike County Courthouse is impressive from the outside, and it's wonderful inside, too. But you're right about the Hancock County one in Carthage. There's nothing like it on the inside.
I would say our courthouse before it was damaged by the tornado in 1945 would have been the most beautiful in the state.
I recently found out that the architect is the same architect of Salem Church.
Really?
And, you know, I frequently go back and forth from Culver Stockton, and the two churches you see are St. Boniface and Salem. Salem's built, you know, that's going up a hill there. You go up another block or two, 11th, mm-hmm. and then that's why John Wood built his first mansion there and the octagonal mansion there, because you can see all the way to Missouri from State Street between 12th and 11th.
Yeah, yeah, you could. The elevated height right there. Yeah, you would.
Yeah, and Salem Church is very prominent.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to talk a little bit, I think, about our anniversary here.
Yeah, 9:55. We've got about 4 minutes left to do
Jack maintains it's been 8 years. I can't believe that.
Well, I'm telling you, Chuck, is when we took the class and we had talked to Mary, and she said, I want to have you guys on before the election and after the election. And we did that, and it was Trump. It was when Trump was elected, and
Jack had some insight on that, because that can't possibly happen. And what was Brexit was maybe a couple weeks or a month before mm-hmm. our November election of 16. And Jack said, "Look at that Brexit. That's telling you something that's out there." And it was. It was definitely and the polls were wrong as usual, just like they were this time. I don't think
because
the polls really mean anything anymore.
That's one of the questions I've been asking people is, were you more surprised by Trump's election in 2016 versus 2024? And invariably, the answer was 2016.
Yeah, he was surprised by 2016, to be honest with you.
I think he was.
Yeah, he was. So, but and of course, the race is tightening up now, where instead of thinking it's going to be a landslide, it's a close
election. But when you have them within the margin of error, it could be close, but it could be a sweep one way or the other. You really don't know.
Right.
But so, Jack, I taught a presidential election course just as a community enrichment for John Wood, started in 84, and then Jack, I would always have to have a strong Republican in there because I'm not going to hide my feelings. And I started out with Mike Terry's dad. Remember Gene Terry.
Mm-hmm.
Strong Republican, great guy. He was a news guy at Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, Gene, you speak up and challenge me on everything. Well, he's gone on to his reward, so I could use Jack. And we didn't do it this year because we're bicentennial. At this bicentennial deal,
busy.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I got half a dozen meetings every week.
Yeah.
And two yesterday.
Yeah.
It's all good. It's going to be great. I mean, we're really 2 months out. We've got the bulk of the money raised. We're ready to fund everything that we have planned. And we have great people stepping up to do Adam DeStrauss on this book, Kathy Dooley on celebrations, Jack. Has finally completed, after a year's effort, our ruler, which is the timeline of Adams County History, 1825 to 2025. It's off being printed, right, Jack?
Yes.
We're going to hand a ruler with the timeline of Adams County history to every school child in Adams County.
Nice.
And that's Jack through his education committee. And I understand they're going to have like a teacher's guide to go with it or a PowerPoint or something.
Yeah, because we're working on a film, too. Randy Phillips and our committee is working on that. So
good.
About 20 to 30 minutes in order to get 200 years of Adams County history in is a little bit demanding, but somehow we'll put it together.
We want our kids, when they study about World War II, they understand Paul Tibbetts was from Quincy.
Right.
And then who Paul Tibbetts was and what he did. And so, the Underground Railroad, they learned about Harriet Tubman in a standard text. Well, we want to tell them we had Dr. Eales in Quincy. We had the Mission Institute. Mm-hmm. We were a huge part. Hundreds of slaves escaped through Quincy.
Why some of the elementary schools are named for who they're named for.
Exactly. Yeah. Each one of those is a good point. Absolutely. And some of them made the timeline even. We're going to have a bigger... It was hard to squeeze things into 12-inch ruler. But we're going to have a monument at the courthouse lawn with the big timeline. And there'll be a lot more that we can put on there, including the incorporation of the other municipalities in the county and that sort of thing.
Very, very good. So, folks, lots coming up with the Adams County Bicentennial. And, of course, we'll keep you updated as best we can and let you know everything that is coming up. But January 18th, the dance at the Armory to really kick off the Bicentennial. We'll have ticket information for you very, very soon. I always enjoy getting to spend time with you gentlemen. Thank you so much for letting me do this.
Thanks for having us,
Scott.
Always.
And
always,
Jack.
Always appreciated very, very much. Stay tuned. We will, of course, be having more. But coming up for you, latest news from Fox. And then it's the Ramsey Show here on WTAD.